Welcome to God and Country Radio, a weekend program that discusses current social, political, economic, and prophetic events in the light of biblical theology. I'm your host, Pastor Brad Winship, pastor of Harbor Bible Church in Lawrence Harbor, New Jersey. This week will be a different sort of program. I just returned from a two-week trip to Albania and Greece. And this is why for the past 4 weeks, my YouTubes and radio programs have been a pre-recorded series on Revelation chapter 6, rather than biblical commentary on current events. Being away from my computer, I have no idea what's going on in the world. We had a young lady in my church involved in missions to Albania, and one thing led to another, and she married a pastor in Libenik, Albania. So I was invited to speak at a Christian leadership conference in Durrës, Albania, on the Adriatic Sea, and then from there to speak at a church in Libenik and Mělník and visit with the believers there. Since I was already in that part of the world, I left for a few days to go on a tour of Greece to visit the archaeological sites related to the Apostle Paul's journey through Greece in Acts chapter 16 through 17. I have a huge file of pictures and video and notes from the trip. It's one big mess, but I'm going to attempt to weave it into a story. On my YouTube channel, you'll get the photos and the video along with the commentary. But here on the radio, only the commentary. You're just going to have to use your imagination. But for those who want to check out my travel vlog, my YouTube channel is God and Country Biblical Exposition, YouTube 406, the Albania-Greece trek. The trip began with a 12-hour flight to the capital of Albania, Tirana, which can be quite uncomfortable, especially if you're claustrophobic. As far as the Albanian mission field, the population of Albania is about 2.5 million. The capital has about 600,000 people. Only about 8 million people in the world speak Albanian, which includes the people of Albania, Kosovo, and parts of northern Macedonia. So in order to do business with the rest of the world, almost everyone, especially the college educated, speak English. Nevertheless, the English messages given at the conference were translated into Albanian for those who weren't proficient. It's really amazing that Alexander the Great from northern Macedonia gathered an army of young men from the various villages in Greece and conquered the known world. The whole ancient world learned Greek as a unifying language, which allowed for the spread of the gospel 400 years later. Lesson: even when demagogues conquer, God has a plan to use it to build his church. Philippians 1:12. I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, which, by the way, is always God's plan. Upon landing in Tirana, the first matter of business was renting a motorcycle. My plan was to speak in Albania for a week and then take the second week to see the sights in Greece. And touring on a motorcycle really allows one to experience the country. You see everything more clearly, and you breathe in all of the native soil. I kind of really feel sorry for all of those tourists who I saw shuffled on and off of buses at each of the archaeological sites. They didn't have an opportunity to explore the region and meet the people. However, using a motorcycle comes with its own risks and headaches. Like in many other overseas destinations, many mission fields, the drivers in Albania do not respect the lane that you're in. Traffic signs are suggestions, and motorcyclists do not wave to each other like here in America. But you know, once I understood the rules of the road, I was ready for the fight. So once I located the guy renting me the motorcycle, I filled out the paperwork, which would allow me to take the motorcycle across the border into Greece. I was then on my way from Tirana, the capital, to the resort city of Durrës in Albania, again on the Adriatic Sea. It actually took me 3 hours to find the conference center. So here's a word to travelers. There are no building or housing numbers in Albania. There are only block numbers. Mail doesn't get delivered. So you have to go to the post office to get your mail. And it's not easy to find specific locations. The conference was held in an upscale hotel on the shore. Just like Christians in America, if you're going to get people to come to a conference, it's helpful to have some resort enticement. Kind of reminds me of the Council of Nicaea in 325. It was sponsored by the Emperor of Rome, and Nicaea was a resort city on a beautiful lake. Well, it was the typical Thursday through Saturday conference. It's held yearly for pastors and Christian workers in Albania, Kosovo, and Northern Macedonia. And there were about 250 in attendance. Spoke three times in the smaller breakout sessions concerning civil government issues. In one message, I explained Christian nationalism. Another message was on 2 Corinthians 7:14. And then another message on civil disobedience. And these ministry leaders generally understood these topics, but I explained they were getting an American perspective, which they are very interested to hear. It was very heartwarming to hear in the main sessions these Albanian Christians singing American hymns and the best of the contemporary Christian worship songs in America. And for me, it was a great reminder that Christians in America must maintain a good testimony and doctrinal integrity because all the world is watching. 2 Corinthians chapter 3. You are our letter, written on our hearts, known and read by all men, being manifested that you are a letter of Christ, cared for by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. Now, Albania is the ancient region of Illyricum, and the Apostle Paul writes in Romans chapter 15, verse 19, in the power of signs and wonders, in the power of the Spirit, so that from Jerusalem and all around, as far as Illyricum, I have fully preached the gospel of Christ. So apparently, Paul made his way over to Albania at some point, probably this city of Durrës, which is on the Ignatia Way. The door to missions and evangelism in Albania came with the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. Albania became a free country, and the underground church began to become visible. Thank God for the handful of believers who kept the church going during these times of persecution. First, Albania was conquered by the Ottoman Empire in 1385, and Islam was forced upon the public. Albania received her independence in 1912 when the Ottoman Empire fell, but then the Germans soon occupied. In 1944, with the end of the German occupation, the Albanian Communist Party took over until 1991. And Albanian communism was an extremely oppressive version of communism, like in North Korea. The pastor in whose church I spoke at, as a boy, had to live in a concentration camp with his whole family. But without violence and bloodshed, with just some public protests and elections, Communist Party was defeated, and the fall of the Soviet Union had a domino effect. The Christian community in Albania has been growing steadily every year, but still, evangelical Protestants only make up 1% of the population, 15 to 20,000. In 1991, there were 20 churches. Now there are about 200. Here's the breakdown according to the 2023 census. There are 1.1 million Muslims, 45% of the population, 200,000 Roman Catholics, 8% of the population, 175,000 Eastern Orthodox, 7% of the population, and the rest of the people are secular. Now, Albania is considered a Muslim country, but I didn't see anyone, especially the young people, practicing the Muslim faith. And this kind of confirmed my theory that the only reason non-Arab countries become Muslim is because of the threat of death. Otherwise, there's very little to attract the people to Islam. Albania is basically secular. In a 2018 survey, 62% of the people said they do not actively practice a religion. So the evangelical Christians in Albania have their work cut out for them. John chapter 4, the field is ripe to harvest. Here's a theologically significant anecdotal story. I spoke with a pastor from Kosovo, and he pointed out that although Kosovo was also under communism, when communism fell, there was no church growth revival in Kosovo, as there now is in Albania. And the reason he saw for the difference was that communism in Albania greatly persecuted the church, while communism in Kosovo left the churches and the people's faith alone. And this is what I've always suspected. You know, national suffering is often what it takes to bring a nation back to God, or at least to save a remnant from the nation. And we may wonder why God allows such repressive regimes to rule over countries. But in the end, if that's the only way to move more souls toward salvation, it's really worth the deprivation and suffering. What shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? So God will allow people to experience the rule of Satan in order that more will be saved. So the church in Albania is growing, and I see some prophetic significance in the gospel coming back to Illyricum after 2,000 years. Remember Jesus' words in the Olivet Discourse? The gospel will be preached as a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. Well, it may be prophetically significant that the gospel is returning to where it started. Now, back to the conference. No matter where you go, Christians have a love for one another and a spiritual connection. Revelation chapter 5, Christ has purchased people from every tribe and language and people and nation. The Albanian word for God is Zoti. And it does seem strange to hear believers sing, "How great is our Zoti." Now, after the conference, I visited the ruins of the ancient Roman theater in Duriz. And it was here, like in many Roman Colosseums, that believers were persecuted and put to death. Most of the ancient sites in Albania and Greece have been covered by modern cities. In Duriz, in Berea, in Thessalonica, there's not much to see, because the old city is under asphalt and apartment buildings. The best ruins are in Philippi, Corinth, the Acropolis in Athens, and Delphi, because those areas were abandoned, and hence the ruins are still there. From there, we headed back to the airport in Tirana to pick up a mission team from a church in New Jersey. Their project was to do repairs on the orphanage boys' home, which is part of the church in Libanik. And that was a 3.5-hour drive at night, and it got down into the 40s. So in this, I learned something about the environment the Apostle Paul worked in. Albania and northern Greece can get very cold. If you look on a map, it's about the same latitude as Connecticut in the United States. Southern Greece, Athens, Corinth, Sparta, stay warmer due to the Mediterranean waters. And the whole area is semi-arid, kind of like Wyoming. So when the sun goes down, there is little moisture in the air to hold the heat. And it gives new meaning to the Apostle Paul's own testimony in 2 Corinthians 11:27, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. So the next day was Sunday. I spoke at the church in Libanik. I shared my testimony, and I brought a simple message from 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 about the coming apostasy, the coming man of lawlessness, the great outbreak of evil at the end of the church age, then God's explanation for why he's removing his restraint for the purpose of judging the world, and then the outcome of the believers. We receive the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. And all Christians really need to know about this prophetic passage, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And I pointed out that even though Paul was in Thessalonica for only 3 weeks, in 2 Thessalonians 2:5, Paul said that while he was with them, he was teaching them about the coming apocalypse and the man of lawlessness. And yet these are brand new believers. I find that spiritually healthy churches and spiritually healthy believers are second coming of Christ prophecy focused. What was also notable about the church in Libanik, and then later on another church in Malik, was the size. About the same size as my church in New Jersey, under 100. And this is Matthew chapter 7. Narrow is the way that leads to life, and few there be that find it. So in this Albanian town of about 6,500 people, less than 1% are true born-again believers. And that's the way it's always been. God has his faithful remnant chosen out of the world. Here's another anecdotal story. A couple of years ago, a large big evangelical ministry, came into Albania to do a mass evangelistic rally, spending millions on a stadium, a sound system, a social media blitz, and bringing in a very popular Christian music group. And they paid the churches in Albania to hire buses to bring their people into the capital, because most of the Christians couldn't afford the trip. And then this ministry claimed all sorts of conversion results, when actually, this big Western evangelical ministry was just playing off of the spiritual energy that was already there due to the grassroots works of small churches. That big EVA ministry would have been more effective if it would have used all that money just to train new pastors and to start new churches in small villages. But many Christians wrongly believe that the work of God is in the fanfare. Remember the case of Elijah, 1 Kings 19. But the Lord was not in the wind, and after the wind an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake, and after the earthquake a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire, and after the fire a sound of a gentle blowing. And then the Lord speaks. Now, the next day, I visited the boys' home sponsored by the church, the day center for the children in the neighborhood, some of the new church building projects and new daycare projects. And a notable key part of this ministry is in their reaching out to the needs of the community, fulfilling Titus chapter 3, verse 14. Our people must also learn to engage in good deeds to meet pressing needs, so they will not be unfruitful. The next day, day 7 of the adventure, after speaking with the leadership team at the church, I was off to explore Greece, hoping to make it to Philippi and find a hotel before the sun went down. You know, I made no reservations in advance. The worst that could happen is I have to find a park to sleep in. Now, one thing I've learned about Greece is that it's very mountainous. It's like driving through the Adirondacks, but maybe even larger, more like the Rockies. You know, apparently during the continental movements, during the Noachic flood, Africa slammed into Europe, turning this into a very mountainous region. Politically, the mountains separated the Greeks geographically. So the Greek people formed individual city-states. And this, too, was in the providence of God. And it also caused the Greeks to be a seafaring people, because there's no way one can walk from northern Greece to Athens without having to go through some impassable mountain ranges. Hence, Acts chapter 17, Paul would sail from Thessalonica to Athens. My only delay in getting to Philippi was getting through the border crossing. I had to buy special insurance to be able to drive in Greece, about 40 euros. Coming down out of the mountains, I arrived at Thessalonica. It sits on a level plain off of the Aegean Sea. It's now one of the major cities in Greece because it's on a plateau and it's farmable. From there, I went on to Neapolis, which is modern Kavala. And we remember from the biblical record that Paul received a vision in Troas to come over to Macedonia and bring the gospel westward rather than going east. Acts 16:11 gives the details of the journey. So putting out to sea from Troas, we ran a straight course to Samothrace, and on the day following to Neapolis, and from there to Philippi, which is a leading city of the district of Macedonia, a Roman colony, and we were staying in this city for some days. Now, one would think that the Roman colony of Philippi would be a seaport, but Philippi is inland about 10 to 15 miles. It's a place that's better for farming and mining, and it's also on the Ignatia Way. Looking out from my hotel room, there's a huge mountain in the Aegean Sea. That's not Troas, but the island of Thasos, where today about 13,000 people live. In Acts 16, it says that Paul didn't stop at the island of Thasos, but another island, Samothrace. Looking out at that sea, I learned one thing. I'd be very reluctant to sail across that sea in the sized boat that Paul and his team took. And it gives new meaning to 2 Corinthians 11. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I've spent in the deep. I've been on frequent journeys and dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea. So here's a lesson. If you're completely risk adverse, you're never going to be able to serve Christ. Part of faith is taking a certain amount of effort and risk to fulfill the Great Commission, to go into all the world and preach the gospel. The next morning, I got up early to go to Philippi. The city of Neapolis is built on the side of a mountain that rises out of the sea. Once up and over the mountain, you can see the valley and the mountain range where Philippi is located. Philippi was a city that's built against the side of a large hill. On top of the hill was the temple. Below is the city, and today you can visit the ruins. There's a Roman theater there that's in good shape and where plays are still performed by the museum. There's also the forum, or rather the town center or business district, where Paul would have interacted with the people. Then there are some remains of some ancient churches built in Philippi called basilicas. During the Christianization of Rome, churches were built on all of the historic sites. There's a large basilica, the ruins of a large basilica near the theater, built around the 5th century, and a smaller octagon basilica built in the 4th century near the forum. But constant earthquakes destroyed them all, and because of the earthquakes, the city was abandoned. Hence, a modern city didn't grow up over the ruins. There also through Philippi was the road called the Ignatia Way, which Paul would have used to travel to Thessalonica. Also in Philippi is the prison where Paul and Silas were held. I have my doubts as to whether this was the actual prison, but it gives us a good idea of what the prison would have looked like. It's not really a building, but more like a cave built into the side of the hill. And about a half mile north is the river where Paul met Lydia. And by that river, there is now an Orthodox Greek chapel, along with a platform for visitors. Since Philippi, a Roman colony, had no Jewish synagogue for Paul to speak to, Paul would go down to the river where, for some reason, even Gentiles would go down to pray. There, Paul would do what we would call today some one-on-one street evangelism, or in this case, river evangelism. A woman by the name of Lydia heard Paul's message. And the most significant verse is that the Lord opened her heart to respond to the things spoken by Paul. Because humanly speaking, it would be impossible for Paul to see any conversions in Philippi. Lydia and her family were the first converts in Europe, and the church was started in her home. And there's a great lesson here in regard to our own evangelism. Always start with those people who show an interest in the things of God at your school, in your neighborhood, at your place of business. You'll always find them. God would have us work with them first, and then others may come along later. Well, I'm out of time. You can go to my YouTube channel, God and Country Biblical Exposition, and get the whole vlog of my travels. I was hoping to sum up my whole trip in just one program, but I haven't even covered my stops at Mount Olympus, the Aegean Sea, Athens, Corinth, and Delphi. There's a lot of great lessons to be learned from those locations. So next week, I'll again be covering this trip, and there will also be a second YouTube. Well, thanks for listening. The website again to get all of the links is GodandCountryRadio.org, and may Jesus Christ reign.